All right, everybody. I am back with another incredible guest and another incredible conversation. This time, I'm introducing you to Daniel Wargo, and we did laugh. There was a lot of laughter in this episode, but also Daniel deals in a milieu or an arena that I kind of can't stop talking about and loving and everything, and namely, that is food and restaurants. And so this is how I met Daniel. A fellow guest introduced me to Daniel and said, hey, you've got to have him on your show. So then I started watching his Instagram content, and I have to tell you that I just kind of fell in love with his channel, with everything food, from the top 10 Orange County restaurants to the underrated Orange County breakfast burritos, conversations and reels about where to have dinner on the Sunset Strip, most underrated barbecue. I mean, for someone who loves food, I just could not stop watching his content. And he has a blooper reel, which I talk about a little bit later in this episode, but I just watched that multiple times because I just love it when people don't take themselves too seriously. So basically, Daniel has, I think, a lot of people's dream job. He gets to go around and try all this scrumptious food, all this incredibly beautiful food, and then report back to us. His Instagram channel is forkingaround.tv, and please do yourself a favor and check it out. But also check out this conversation, which should be starting just as soon as I finish eating this incredibly decadent and fabulously spicy green chili cheeseburger.
So about 3 years ago, I was working a serving job, and I was, you know, kind of doing all this stuff. And I, one day I was walking my boy Sherman. I had some In-N-Out in one hand. I had the dog leash in the other. I was getting my keys out, ready to go to my apartment. And like another, my neighbor walked out with her dog, and my dog jumped at that, towards that dog. And the leash wrapped around my finger and broke my finger. Well, you know, I would say I'm Daniel, and it's hard because I feel like I always want to say what I do. I'm a food content creator. I'm an entertainer. I enjoy making people laugh. I love food and my dog. I always have to work in my dog Sherman into every conversation because he is my child. And yeah, I love laughing, and I love making people laugh, and I like the lighter things in life, you know, experiences and fun things and TV shows and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can absolutely tell because I've been watching your amazing Instagram.
Thank you.
Which has made me laugh. And what I really loved was that you included a blooper reel in the last week, I think. And it's so funny. It's so good. I think for people just in the world to see that this curated content, this, you know, delightful, funny, irreverent content, whatever kind of content you're putting out there, people make mistakes. And so I think it's so human. It makes you so human to include that part in your, so I actually watched it a couple of times and I laughed. So
good.
You're getting me laughing. That's heads up on that.
That's the whole point.
Yeah. So, you know, I ask this question often. When you were a kid, did you think, oh my gosh, this is what I'm going to be when I grow up?
No, not at all. I mean, I did want to be in the entertainment industry. I went to school for like musical theater and acting and all of that. And so that was like a hidden dream when I was a kid. I was kind of shy. And so I wouldn't have been like openly telling people like, hey, I want to be on this TV show, or I want to be famous, or I don't know, you know, whatever that those kid like dreams might be. But I kind of even looked back at all my, like the jobs that I wanted when I was a kid. And I only wanted those jobs because I wanted to be on that TV show. And when I realized that, then I was like, oh, I want to be a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be on The Practice, like that was, you know, or like on Boston Legal or something. And I thought I wanted to be like an animal trainer, but I realized I just wanted to be Jeff Corwin, you know? So it's like, I didn't really want to do those things. I wanted to entertain. And that's kind of the through line of my childhood, I think, even though I was kind of battling shyness and, you know, and not really like, I was not outspoken at all. So no to the food, but yes to the entertainment part of it, you know, so.
Totally. I mean, I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I was in the chorus of all the musicals that we had in high school. Mm. And I loved it. I loved being a part of something, but not being up front and center, partially because I can't remember lines to save my life. And then secondly, because, you know, the chorus is kind of this ragtag group of kids that are just, you know, they pay attention, they have to sing, they have to dance, they have to do whatever. But you're just kind of like the set dressing for the people who are up front. And I always had more fun as a chorus member. It was really, really, we did some, you know, Fiddler on the Roof, the pajama game, you know, these My Fair Lady, these good old musicals from back in the heyday. So were you involved in those musicals in high school?
Yeah. So my, my parents are musicians, just kind of like to throw it back. That's what they did for a living. And so when I was a kid, I always had to like practice an instrument. And so like eighth grade, I want to say is when I think that's when American Idol came out. And then I was like, I want to sing. And both my parents are singers. And so, I started singing and, so I was doing singing kind of like early in high school. And by my junior year, I transferred to an arts high school and they had like voice program and musical theater program. And because they were just always short on boys, I was like grabbed into the musicals, you know? So it was kind of like, and I had always wanted to do them, but I was so shy. And so I had done like stuff in eighth grade, but you know, that was it. And so, yeah, that's kind of where my musical like career started, so to speak, was once I finally got to that arts high school and I was basically forced into them.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, because, you know, when we lived overseas, when I lived in Pakistan, my parents put me in ballet, which I'm like an elephant or a bull in a china shop. I am not elegant. I am not delicate. I am not someone who should be doing ballet, even at the ripe old age of 6 or 7 or 8,
yeah.
However old I was, I just should not have been doing it. And, you know, of course it's all girls. And I remember we did Cinderella and there were no boys. So because I had short blonde hair, I was made the prince and I still feel like I was robbed. Like the biggest crime. I remember leaving the country. I remember leaving that bay. Look at me. Look at how old I am. And I still can't let it go. My God, let it go. Yeah. The other thing, I'm just having these fantastical ideas of you know, your parents being musicians, them being singers, them kind of dragging you from smoky bar to smoky bar and saying, hey, sit over there in the corner and eat a grilled cheese and watch us perform until 1 in the morning. Was that your reality?
That was
okay.
Pretty much the exact opposite. My dad was a high school choir teacher and my mom is a like church choir director, musician. And my dad worked at churches too. So we were dragged to churches, but that it was morning time. So never the evening, unless it was like some concert, you know.
Got it. So no grilled cheeses in a smoky corner.
Unfortunately, no. No food at all, actually. So.
God. Well, maybe I let my imagination get away with me.
You know, it sounds more fun.
Well, you know, I've always found that people that want to be entertainers, you know, a lot of them are really brash and open and kind of, you know, they want to face the world. They want to get noticed, but it sounded like you were pretty shy. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, despite that, you put yourself out there, you kind of dipped your toe in the waters. And then I would assume that it kind of just accumulated to where now, you know, I see you.
Yeah.
And all of the, I want to hear what you do now, please tell my listeners, but like, was what you do now nerve-wracking for you? Or was it just, you're like, I've got the chops. I've conquered my fears. I'm out in the world. I can do this.
No, I think it is. It was nerve wracking when I first started, especially. It's not the part of it, like the filming of my content, that's nerve wracking. It was the putting myself out there in a way that, you know, my mind maybe perceived that I was going to be made fun of, or, you know, just all of those things that I think, you know, we as humans, or especially as creators and artistic types, like, you know, the fear of like failing publicly was definitely there. And so I think that's where the fear came in, like for me. But there was also a lot of, well, I got a lot of encouragement, which helped, but there was a lot of confidence that just came through doing, you know, that. So like the more I did it, the more I realized that I could do it. And, you know, I think that's kind of been the trajectory with my performing career, so to speak, is that, you know, I was shy. I am shy. I can go into a room better than I could as a child and like talk to people, and that's fine. But like innately I'm kind of introverted, and I don't, you know, I don't put myself out there. I ask to be put out there. And, but when I'm on stage, when I'm on camera, when I'm, you know, having the attention at me, it's like, I feel so comfortable and I click. And so it's like, I don't know what that is, but it's there. And so like, once we're in this new space, that's where I can kind of be myself. And so I realized that pretty early on in my content creation is like, oh, just turn on the camera. Like, I don't have to sit here and like think and get nervous. And what am I going to say? Just turn it on and we'll figure it out, you know? And so that's what it has become through that.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So tell everybody what your Insta is, and then just describe for them what you do, because sure. I don't think I can do that adequately.
Sure. So I run a channel called Forking Around, essentially on Instagram. It's forkingaround.tv. I'm on TikTok, YouTube as well. And what I do is I create mainly short form content. You know, that's anything and everything related to food. I call it food entertainment. I do reviews. I do food news. I do fun things surrounding food. And so I do a lot. I'm based in LA, and I grew up in Orange County. So I do a lot in LA and OC, but, it's not restricted to those places. Do a lot of chains, do a lot of traveling, you know, whatever it might be. And I like to, show local spots, and give honest opinion and hopefully, make someone laugh in the process, or at the very least roll their eyes a little bit. That's what it comes down to for me.
Well, I have to ask you, how are you not 10 million pounds and dying of a heart attack right now?
Because yeah,
all of the amazing, delicious, crazy. I mean, I just watch and I think to myself, dear God, I could not have this diet. Then I thought, he's younger than I am and more robust. And so this is why he's able to do this. How is this happening? How is this possible?
I don't know. I mean, when I started this journey, I weighed a lot less than I do now. And that could be just aging, or it could be the food. I don't know. Probably both. But, you know, I don't eat everything that I put on camera. Obviously, I take bites and I share food. And, you know, I don't. I can't. I couldn't. I have one stomach and that's it. That's all there is. The amazing thing this summer is I've been able to lose weight. I don't know how that's happened. Like, that's been a miracle and a half. So it's a journey. I really try to take my health into account, especially now. Like I noticed a point where I was just feeling worse, and I'm like, well, I have to keep eating, 'cause that's kind of my job. So how are we going to do this? It's kind of a balancing act.
I was just going to say that it has to be a balancing act. You know, I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So if you ever visit, you're not allowed to cross state lines unless you have Sherman with you. Just
okay.
Out there. you know, of course, here in Santa Fe, the breakfast burrito is king. And people are always like, where's the best breakfast? You know, experimenting at all these places, and it's covered with chili or nut chili or Christmas chili or all of these things. And just recently you did a breakfast burrito kind of, I don't know, would you call it a contest or burrito off or something. How do you find these places? I mean, where, how do you figure out where you want to go?
I listen to comments a lot. So that I would say that's like a fair amount. I'm also, you know, at the end of the day, the reason I started this is I am a foodie. So I watch content. I'm reading about new restaurants, you know, like I'm always kind of keeping my ear low to the ground to just find out what looks cool. What's, you know, what do I want to try? And then, you know, sometimes it's just a little bit of luck. I'll just be driving and I'm like, that spot looks good. Let's give it a try. So yeah, mostly people tell me where to go and I listen to them.
I want your life.
Okay. It's fun. I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah, it's a crazy, I don't know why it's a job, but it's a job and I'm very grateful. So.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, I get pretty jealous looking at everything that you can eat. Mm-hmm. It's like very annoying for me, you know, besides the fact that I would weigh 10 million pounds if I did what you did, but then I have celiac, so I can't eat most of what you talk about. So there is a lot of jealousy happening side of the interview. Just want you to know.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, I'm vicariously also just like, okay, I can enjoy it this way. And it's fun to see all the different places and the different people and the different creations and concoctions and what have you. You'll have to come to Santa Fe and do some sort of like thing here, because there's, you know, there's so much that you could do. You could do, you know, a series on chilies. You could do a series on breakfast burritos. You could do, I mean, it's crazy. Food trucks. Honestly, you could just, you would roll out of town. Let's just put it that way.
You're talking me into it for real. So
but again, I'm very serious about the no Sherman. The state will not let you.
Got it. I'll figure that out.
Well, I'm really intrigued because you already kind of alluded to this a little bit. You know, when I was fantasizing about you being dragged from Smoky Bar to Smoky Bar, you said, no, here's what my parents did.
Yeah.
My second question is, did you grow up in a religious household? And then if you did, how has that evolved over time for your belief set in the world and how you interact with maybe your childhood kind of growing up religious spirituality, et cetera, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did grow up in a religious household. I grew up Catholic. My parents are both pretty strong Catholics. My mom always worked for the church my whole life and still to this day. And my dad would have a church gig on the weekends. Pretty much my whole childhood, he had a church gig on the weekends. So had a lot of religion in the house. And my own experience was, you know, I worked for the church for a long time as well because I'm a musician. I play piano and sing. And so I worked from like 16 till 30, doing different, working at like probably 100 different churches and doing, you know, different, all the services and kind of in, you know, I was just there. That was my life until basically the pandemic. So I have kind of like a weird relationship with it, to be honest, you know, because not in a bad way or anything, but, you know, it's like you see the inside of the, you see the inner workings of it, right? I don't really like consider myself religious anymore. I'm not in a negative way or anything. I consider myself more spiritual and I do kind of what works for me and I respect what works for other people. And so that's kind of where I try to attack it now is just like, you know, I've been to more, you know, masses than most people have in their whole life. Most like staunch Catholics have in their whole life. So I've been around it a lot. And so, now I'm just kind of in this like, more spiritual place, adopting what I need, what I feel works for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually dated a Catholic for about 5 years and he's pretty devout, very liberal, but he believed that he could create change from within the church. And the Archdiocese of Portland, where I lived at the time, the church was just so utterly gorgeous, Art Deco, like this insane work of art. And I was not Catholic, but I certainly appreciated there was something very good for my nervous system. You know, the liturgy is the same every time. Mm-hmm. You know, the Archbishop at the time was a White Sox fan from Chicago. So, and he was funny and hilarious and approachable. And one of the priests was a Jesuit. So his sermons were always like based in science. It was actually, and then another priest, he was like 85 and he always had some strange arcane like 3D model he brought to every sermon. So you just like didn't know what you were going to get.
Yeah,
I kind of loved it. It was very good for my soul. I am not Catholic, but I do, you know, it was a great, great place for me to just go learn new things, listen. But also just to be in that building, which frankly was spectacular.
It
was
spectacular.
So are you a tenor or a bass?
I'm a baritone.
You're a baritone. Okay.
Yeah. So somewhere in the middle.
Well, I thought to myself while you were talking about singing and playing the piano, which they tried to get me piano lessons when I was a kid. And I just could not, I don't have the capacity in any way, shape or form. Again, ballet, piano, it's like, I can't do these
not
things
for you.
That require grace. But you know, despite all that, I was thinking about you creating bespoke, you know, for like the winner of your burrito contest, you write a bespoke burrito song and you play it on the piano. and you like that would make me laugh because you just have the talent for it. I presume you can write music and it would be actually really, really funny for me. And I bet it could just be like little ditties. They could be like 30 seconds long, but it would be, I'm just putting that little bug in your ear.
I love it. I love it. I'll have to play around with that.
So I'd love to, you know, you have been eating so much, trying so many different foods. I would greatly appreciate which was one of your favorite kind of, you know, competition food offs that you did, you know, burgers, burritos, tacos, whatever. Mm-hmm. And how do you choose your winners, frankly?
Well, I mean, choosing the winner is just by personal preference. I'm not a, you know, I like to say I like to yell it from the rooftops. I'm not a critic. I'm not trained in food. I don't know what I'm talking about to a certain extent. Like I have an opinion. I the more I eat, the better I know food, you know, and the better I can like tell what's right and what's wrong. And then there's personal preference on top of that. So like, you know, I do clarify it that way. So, you know, it comes down to personal preference. What was executed well, and then what was what I preferred. But yeah, I think my favorite was pizza, which was surprising to me because I was dreading it. I was like, ugh, pizza. Like, I just didn't want to do it. I was like, it's going to be expensive because I'm going to have to buy a whole pizza every time I do this. And like, just really fell in love with the art form of pizza, which I didn't know anything about really. And, like was just floored by it. And now I'm like a true fan, you know, of pizza.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed pizza because, you know, I am a burger person. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up after we moved home from the overseas, I grew up in the Midwest. And so, you know, there, of course, it's like Chicago, right? Hot dogs, pizza, but also burgers, like everything has.
Sure.
It's like meat, and how can we add more meat?
Yeah, yeah.
but I really, really, and especially actually also living here in Santa Fe, the big thing is the green chili cheeseburger.
It is
a frigging thing. Okay, so I have to tell you something. So one of my best friends and a boss for a long time was this guy who owns Iconic Coffee Roasters here in Santa Fe. And he got invited as a business leader to the green chili cheeseburger cook-off event. And he got to like, he was supposed to sit up in this balcony. There were like six, you know, chefs and business leaders, and they bring you full-sized about 20 burgers that you have to try over the course of 5 hours. And so he looked at me and he's like, I don't really want to go to this. Do you want to do this? And I was like, yeah. Okay. I don't get out of my way, everybody.
Yeah.
So I said, it was so surreal. You're like in this balcony, all the people are down below at this fair. They're watching them bring the burgers to you. It's like, oh my God. And you, of course, you know, over the course of the day, you're there for so long, you're like, I'm so hungry. But then you get to this point where you're like, I'm so bloated. I can't deal with this. And quite honestly, the most amazing burger was made by this food cart in Albuquerque that is run by, I believe it was Pakistanis, people who immigrated from Pakistan. And it was, I mean, by far, it was, every single person was like, this is the best green chili cheeseburger. But eating them all in one day was a mistake. I first of all, the food waste alone kind of made me sick. But then the next day, my body was like, what are you doing to me? Like, how can you do this? All this to say, burgers are like one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
So when I find a good burger that's done really well, whether it's with Kobe beef or, you know, some other kind of beef, but the flavoring's good, I'm like a huge fan. And I don't even necessarily need the bun. If a burger is delicious, you should be amazing without the bun. So I love that pizza was yours because Chicago's a big pizza fan. So I want to ask you, just for my own edification, have you ever had like the deep dish in Chicago?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Now, is that your fave or did you find that you really relished a thinner crust?
I do like a thinner crust. I have had, in Chicago, I went to Lou Malnati's.
Yeah.
And then I've had a few out in LA. I don't know, like, because I've only had one time in Chicago. You know, like people will tell me this is the most authentic, this is the most authentic, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't know. But, I tend to, I don't want to say I dislike it because I do like it, but I tend to not love that like cornmeal kind of crust. My mom obsessed. She's so happy if I bring home one of those. I'm like, I prefer a thinner crust personally, although I love Detroit. So, which I know.
What's that one?
Detroit style pizza is like it's like a deep dish pan pizza, almost like a steel pan. So yeah.
Okay.
Very crispy. And I would say it's on the side. If you've like had a Sicilian slice, it's like closer to that than a Chicago deep dish.
So, I mean, I presume you've had the Chicago hot dog as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite? Okay. So you have to know I'm a foodie too. And one of the things that drives me the craziest about your amazing channel is that, and the work that you're doing is that you always hold the food up to the camera. So it feels like it's a 3D thing. Like the burrito is coming towards my mouth and I'm like, I can't stand being in this way. This is so utterly unfair to everyone. Yeah. Cause everything looks delicious. And I'm like, dear God. So what's your favorite ingredient? I'm going to tell you mine. It's the celery salt that they put on the hot dogs.
The celery salt.
Yeah. But you know, different people make Chicago dogs a different way. Like some people add sauerkraut, some people add small pickles, all sorts of things.
I have to be honest. I have only had one.
Okay.
It was at Wrigley Field. I don't know if that's the best one. Legit. I was just there. I remember being fascinated by that neon green relish. I don't think I've ever seen any food that somehow makes that color. Like, how is that possible?
It's not. Although it's not.
Okay.
We all just eat it. We're like, oh, you know, cancer be damned.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm all about YOLO, you know, but I'm curious and I liked it. I think that was my favorite part, whatever that it makes me feel like I'm eating gushers, you know, like things that aren't not like they're flavor wise, but things that aren't meant for Nate. They're not from nature.
Yes.
They're from a factory, you know, or a science lab.
I love that. Something not from nature. I love the way you say that because, you know, I have certainly seen that neon green relish and I've thought, oh, that's odd. I don't, you know, but then usually when you're at a ball game, you're like drinking or whatever, and you don't care.
Yeah.
Reach this point where you're like, I don't care anymore about cancer and this factory food. And it's going to make me sick, but I just kind of acknowledge that.
Right. Well, you're already eating a hot dog.
yeah,
like made from God knows what in there. So it's like, just add the green, like the whatever, like we're already doing this. Let's just go ham.
Go whole hog, as they would
say. Whole hog. There you go. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I said this to you before kind of we started recording, but I, you know, in the midst of a world that is pretty intense and full of lots of stress these days, I found, and it's really hard sometimes for me to wake up in the morning. I try not to look at the news because there's just so much heightened emotion. Mm-hmm. You and I had a conversation about what does it mean to be a creator and put our content in the world without acknowledging what is going on. And, you know, I said, you know, internally, my thought process is, you know, yes, there are things that should be addressed or even internally kind of understood. A lot of times I feel like I don't have enough information. So mm-hmm. I need to wait and study and understand something before I put my voice out there. But also there's such a thing as creating joy, creating beauty, creating hilarity, creating, you know, a place where people can go and just be still and relax and revel in food or a podcast or whatever without having some sort of political thing kind of put down their throat. And you do that really nicely.
Thank you.
So I want to say thank you for that. And also I commended you on the statement that you said that not every creator needs to, you know, put their voice out there and say something about what's going on in the world. We can just create beauty and joy and people can take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, you perfectly said, there is a time and a place for certain things. And, you know, there are people who have dedicated their, you know, content journey to addressing topics and on all sides and every which way. Great. That's the style of content they do. My content has nothing to do with anything outside of food. And to be completely honest, every single person eats from, you know, like every literal person on this planet eats. And so, you know, the one thing that we know is that we're all not going to agree with each other, but it's not my job to address those or put those at the forefront. That's how I feel. My job is to entertain, to bring lightness, to bring positivity, to bring joy, and hopefully some laughter, because those are things that I believe are healing at the end of the day. And so, and that's what works for me. You know, like when I've been in the darkest times of my life, you know, I'll put on Friends or I'll put on The Office or I'll put on whatever. And like, that helps me. And so my whole purpose for doing this is actually not about food at all. It's about, you know, how can I create a little bit of joy, a little bit of like free you from that stress for 1 minute. I get like 90 seconds to free you from the stress of your life. You know, wherever you may be seeing my content, that's my goal. If it doesn't work, I'm sorry, but you know, that's how I'm approaching every piece of content, is how can I free you from that stress for just a little bit?
Yes. And I can assure everybody that he is very funny. I want to ask you, when did you kind of first suspect that you were funny? I know that's a hard question. It's like,
yeah.
When I was a kid and my parents would have guests over, me and my siblings and I would assault people with these weird, funny plays that we'd created. They were like 5 minutes long, so nobody had to suffer too greatly. But it was kind of the first thing that I thought, oh, I like performing for people and being silly. And all the people, bless their hearts, would sit and listen to us. Thank God. I can like address it back to them. So,
yeah, I don't. Honestly, I'm trying to pinpoint a moment. At some point, I think it must be, you know, in my like later high school years when I started doing performing and stuff, I realized that I loved making people laugh. And so I don't know where like it happened. I had some professors in college, and because I was in musical theater, who were like, you're really good at the funny stuff. So I had people telling me like, do comedy. And so, you know, and I was like, great. Cause I like people making, that's what I want to do anyway. So it was like, You know, but I don't know that there was like a moment where it occurred to me that I'm funny. And actually, I don't know that I'm that funny, but I like to try, you know, like that. I don't feel like, oh, I'm this hilarious person. Like I should get up on stage and tell jokes or whatever. I just like I'm OK being my goofy self and I'm OK. Like I think that some of my jokes are funny to me. So I'm like, what the hell? Like, why not? You know, like I'm going to throw it out there. I'm going to be myself. And, or like that's myself plus is what I often refer to it as, like, you know, when you're on.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you strike me as someone who would be excellent at improv. Am I wrong about that?
I haven't tried in years, but, when I did try in my early 20s and stuff like that, when I first came to Hollywood, you know, to do the acting thing, it just terrified the absolute, you know, can I swear on here? I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Terrified the shit out of me. So, I really was, so I wasn't very good at it. I don't know now because I have less cares, you know, but I am definitely better in the moment than scripted. I'll say that. I don't know if how well that applies to like the rules of improv, but I find my best jokes in the moment. And the funniest things just off the cuff. I don't often like come up with things in advance.
Okay. Okay. Now I do note that you have so many comments under everything you do and people are so excited about what you're doing and they're like, go here, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you have a fan base that is kind of super invested. And you also strike me as someone who would have a lot of friends. And I feel like anybody who's in musical theater, you kind of create this family while you're in every, you know, play or musical that you're in. So do you find that you're bringing old friends along for the ride and making new friends? Or is it all just a giant experiment for you? And you're like, I don't know who's going to comment every day.
Yeah, it is a little bit of that. I mean, I think food in itself is like kind of polarizing because like people, what I've learned is like everybody has their places and they're like insulted if that's not your favorite place or, you know, it's like very, very passionate about certain things. And so, you know, I think that breeds a lot of commentary from people is just like, oh, you're wrong about this. Or well, what about this one? Or, you know, like. Or that's my favorite, you know, like you nailed it or, you know, whatever it might be. And so I never really know. And I mean, I know that there are people out there that, you know, view my content and that have been along for the ride for a while. But it all seems very, it still seems like I'm rolling the dice every time I put something out. I have no idea, you know.
I never thought about people being super defensive of their favorites, but that totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So you're saying you could potentially start a burger war or something between people.
Yeah. Yeah. There are times where my content has been extremely polarizing and has upset multitudes, you know, and obviously that's kind of the, you know, the antithesis of my goal, but, I gotta say it helps the content, you know, it helps in general to have people fighting back and forth. I always say that I'm sure it sounds like it might be the same in New Mexico, but like breakfast burritos out here are a religion. And so if I have insulted your breakfast burrito, I have insulted your religion and it is extremely dangerous to say anything like that.
Maybe you should create your own church, the Church of the Breakfast.
Sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
Like sell t-shirts.
Yeah.
Make money.
Like that.
Yes. I'm all about that.
Sounds like a great way to make money.
Well, I told you this before, but I just want to reiterate. I love it. You're Thanks. So approachable. You're funny. You're irreverent. But also I really appreciate that when you're talking about the food or the item or what have you, part of me thinks dear God, he's taking one for the team, because I don't think I would eat a plate of whatever those cheese covered jalapeno, whatever those were. There was something that was breaded. I can't remember. Anyway, I was like, okay, someone's taking it for the team. But I also think to myself, you're also no nonsense in some ways. And you're like, here's the truth. Here's my experience. And I appreciate that too. You know, there's not a lot of like weird filler or fluff. You're just like, here's my experience. Take it or leave it. You know, but certainly, you know, I encourage you to come here and try it yourself, but giving people, I don't know. I just was like, I want your job. Okay. I just want your job. Love to ask the main question of the podcast, which is, you know, I would so appreciate if you would share a story or maybe even more than one story of something that you consider to be magical, miraculous, mysterious, something that kind of changed your life, that made you think about things in a different way or consider the universe in a different way. I'd love to hear whatever you'd like to share.
Sure. Yeah. There's something that comes to mind here, and I don't know, you know, how it'll kind of check this box, but it does relate to my journey as a creator, over the past 5 years now. And, for years, I have been doing this and I grind every single day. I still feel like I'm grinding like crazy. Obviously I have a following, but you know, like I'm nowhere near where I'd like to be, you know, like, so I'm still in the grind. But for years, for probably the first 2 years, it was just that. It was like me and, you know, my closest friends and my mom and, you know, maybe like 1,000 or 2,000 followers, which I was grateful for, but it was very, very small beans. So about 3 years ago, I was working a serving job and, I was, you know, kind of doing all this stuff and one day I was walking my boy Sherman. I had some In-N-Out in one hand. I had the dog leash in the other. I was getting my keys out, ready to go to my apartment. And like my neighbor walked out with her dog and my dog jumped towards that dog. And the leash wrapped around my finger and broke my finger. It wasn't even that huge of a deal. Like it was just, I mean, it was painful. Obviously I use a different kind of leash now. It's all good. But so I broke my finger. I had to basically quit the serving job because I couldn't, they wouldn't allow me to carry things, I think they just didn't want someone looking like that in their restaurant. So here's where the thing comes through. So all this stuff is like coming to a head. And so I have to go to the doctor. And the doctor that I find is in Pasadena, which is like 30 minutes away from where I was. And I don't really go over to Pasadena, but my brother lives at that direction. And so I say, oh, do you want to grab lunch? I have this doctor's appointment. So grab lunch at this, like Vietnamese, like fast casual, like build your own spring roll kind of place. And, while I'm there, I just take some quick shots, quick video, whatever. I'm not even planning to make a video on it. Nothing, whatever. I go to the doctor's appointment. Maybe a month later, I'm like, I need some content. Let me put this together. So I make this like 19-second video with voiceover. My face isn't even in it. It's like nothing. And it was my first viral hit. And it changed the trajectory of everything from that point on. And in the moment, I'm thinking, oh, cool. Like, it's, you know, this finally happened. It was bound to happen. But the more I looked into it, the more I'm like, well, I wouldn't have been there. I would never have been there if my finger hadn't have broken. And I wouldn't have quit that job if my finger, you know, like all of this stuff like came kind of out of this bad event or whatever, this thing that this nuisance in my life. And I, you know, had that not happened, now another video might've gone off. I don't know, but it was that one after 2 years. And it was the reason was just this like thing, you know, this thing that you would just be like, God damn it. Like this happened. That shouldn't have happened. And all of a sudden So that's kind of what comes to my mind first.
Oh, yeah. And I think what you're trying to say is that SHRM has your back.
Yeah.
And SHRM, he knew what he was doing. Absolutely. Like, OK, this one here.
Yeah.
Maybe needs to have his finger broken because and I guess no one else is going to do it. So I'm going to have to do it for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the most outrageous, you know, to get the wheels turning, you know, I can just see. You know, Sherman's like, I know what needs to happen here, and it's going to happen in this crazy way.
Yeah.
Because I have to be the agent to do this. And because I'm so cute, by the way.
Yes, of course.
I will be forgiven everything for breaking his finger. He doesn't know yet what kind of huge, good things are going to come his way, but I will be the agent for you. You're a little guardian angel.
He really did it. Yeah. I mean, he ruined that day, but it was, but, in the long run, really, I mean, that was the chess piece that needed to move in order for the next thing to come. And, yeah, it was, so it felt very like, I mean, miraculous is a crazy word to use there. It's not that, but it felt like divine kind of like timing of like things working out, you know, in the right way, or in a way that was like meant to be in some weird way. Yeah,
absolutely. I just want to note for everybody who's listening that Sherman walked behind you and has something that looks like a donut. And I thought, you know, like father, like son.
yes.
But I also think your story, what's remarkable about it is that we can have these events in our lives. We have these things happen. You know, when you broke your finger, you're like, okay, so this happened and it's going to make my life more complicated. I just lost my job. And you think to yourself, this is so mundane, right? This is so mundane. I broke my finger. And, but these mundane events that we experience that we just don't really know, understand, or we don't understand, it's like the universe or that divine timing is getting things lined up so that you could find success in a different way, in a way that was totally unexpected, almost like kismet. You know, it's like Sherman broke your finger so that you could show up in this other place, get these images, this film of this Vietnamese place, which then has set the trajectory of your entire life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, have you ever considered maybe nominating Sherman for sainthood in the Catholic Church?
I would consider it. Definitely. Okay. You know, I have connections.
Okay. So. You have connections. Yeah. And so I'm sure that, you know, also, I think you need three demonstrable incidents of miraculous workings.
Oh, it's three.
Okay. I thought it was three. Is it more or less?
No, it's probably three. I was hoping it'd be one.
But. Oh, okay. Yeah. No, it's three. And so you have to find two other people for Sherman to break their fingers or do something kind of maybe like cause some mayhem in other people's lives so that, you know, something beautiful can come. He's like a little chaos agent.
He is.
I love that for him.
Yeah, no, that's him to a T. So I'm sure there's probably some out there already that I don't even know about these miracles yet.
Well, no, I'm sure. And I love how, you know, kind of he's lying behind you and he's eating on his little donut and he's very, he looks benign. He looks benign. But in reality, he's kind of this superhero.
He is.
People's lives. And it may be, you know, a secret how he's changing people's lives when it happens. But then later on, you're like, my God, Sherman was at the crux of it all. And then you just understand that, yeah, he needs to be nominated for sainthood.
He is the reason. He is the reason. So
I love that. It reminds me of Mandalorian. What is it they say? This is the way.
Whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sherman, he is the reason.
Yeah.
That could be your second t-shirt.
I love it.
Yes. Well, all that joking aside, I mean, I'm sure that when that happened, you had no inkling conception that your life would change in these ways because of this incident. And is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I just thought I was like, well, how am I going to pay rent? And, you know, what am I going to do? Because the other skill that I'm really good at is playing piano, and that's off the table, too. So, like, you know, it was very scary at the time. And I was still making content. I had been the whole time. And so in my head, I was like, this is going to happen eventually. Like, it has to happen because I'm working way too hard for it not to happen. But, you know, yeah, I think the more, you know, I think even where that's coming from, you know, you look at these events in your life and you like, look at that. Well, I decided to do that there. And I made that choice there. I lived here, signed that lease, you know, like whatever it is. And it's like, all of these things are the, you know, like if you chose a different way, then you're not sitting here right now, you know? And, so, you know, there's a lot of like that. I mean, you can look at that however you do, you know, but to me, it's a lot of that, like, I don't know, listening to the universe or to your gut or whatever, that kind of leads you where you're supposed to go or like toward a lesson that you're supposed to learn or something.
Yeah. It's like the synchronicity, right?
Totally.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think part of the success of that is showing up when you need to, because certainly when you went and met your brother for lunch, you did not have to take your phone out. You didn't have to get any footage.
Right.
You just sat there and had lunch, but yep. Something kind of compelled you or maybe urged you or whatever. You just felt the inspiration to do that. And mm-hmm. It changed everything. So yep. It sounds like it's a beautiful kind of concoction of, you need one chaos agent and then you need some synchronicity and you have to accept the invitation and then good things can happen.
So. Yeah. Well, and it's also the all the preparation, right? Like yes. that leads up to it, which yeah. Had I not made 1,000 videos to that point.
Yes.
Like, you know, there was a lot playing into it, but altogether it made for a pretty life-changing experience that, I mean, really directly, you know, if you look at the point in my career where everything changes, that's the point that everything changes for me.
Now I feel like a jerk because I just made Sherman like the center of your story when you just had years of content. Oh my God. Okay. Well, sorry.
No, he's the center of my life and he's the center of most of my stories. So it makes sense.
Well, also, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they nominate animals for sainthood, but just putting that out there.
They really should.
They should. Yeah. I think what's gorgeous about your story and what I really appreciate is that you did not give up. You know, even though you'd done several years of content, even though you were putting things out there, it's almost like the universe saw your work. I think of Karate Kid, right? He's like painting the fence up and down,
yeah.
Polishing it. You know, there's years of preparation, years of practice, years 100%. Of doing something. And then it's almost like the universe is like, okay, you have proved your intention to create good things, to bring beauty into the world, to bring content that helps people or lifts them up or whatever. You know, we're just going to introduce this little like chaos agent here, and it's going to shoot you off into something that's going to be even bigger or more beautiful than you've imagined. And so it's like, it's a whole lot of hard work. What did they mm-hmm. say? It's like 99% perspiration. So it's like 99% perspiration, one chaos agent, and then you have...
And then it's off to the races. And it's also, I think there's something to be said for like, once you find the thing that you're meant to do or meant to do in that moment, you know, like everything kind of becomes easier. And so like, yeah, I didn't quit, but in my mind, I was like, well, I'm supposed to be doing this, not, you know, and so there's kind of a lot at play. I look back at in my 20s and even my early 30s where it's like, oh, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to try this one. And like, you don't stick through with it. It's not because you're lazy or because you're, I don't know, the intentions weren't there or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's just like not meant for you. And, you know, that when I decided to make that pivot into creating content, it all of a sudden everything clicked and it was like, oh, cool. Like that's what we're doing now. And yeah, I'm serving tables to make money, but this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that because I think so many people give up before, I don't know. Yes. It's like slogging through. You can tell that I'm a Gen X because now I want to bring up Never Ending Story and the Swamp of Sadness.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it is, it's like, going through the swamp of sadness and the mud's up to your mid thigh, and you're making content, you're working for years, you're doing all this stuff. And then at some point you meet a giant turtle in a swamp and they send you off into your next adventure, which then leads to success. And the point, the key is to not give up. And I think something inside of you must have been telling you that you had struck gold, that what you were doing felt good, that it resonated, that it was kind of part of what you've been born for. And that probably kept you going. Is that true?
Yeah, that's 100% true. I mean, everything led to that, in that I was doing acting and writing and auditioning and, you know, whatever, like I was doing in my 20s and my teenage years, you know, getting ready for this. But it just got to a point where it was like, well, I could just do this myself. You know, I don't need to really wait, you know, and you have to look at the barriers. What are your barriers to entry, right? Learning how to, for me, it's learning how to edit, learning how to film, like, you know, anything with lighting. I have to learn how social media works. And so like all, you have the barriers in front of you, but once you make that determination, like I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this thing that scares me and that I'm unsure of the outcome or how it will be perceived. But once you have that focus on that, then I think like, well, then even attacking the barriers are easier because you're like, well, I have to get that out today. I don't know how I'm going to do that because I don't know this thing, but right. Like you just do it.
Yeah. And then the world becomes your oyster.
Totally. Yeah.
Just kidding, everybody. I did not actually begin this conversation eating a green chili cheeseburger after that contest that I participated in a few years ago. I actually think I'm still bloated from that. So I hope you loved this conversation with Daniel and also his patience with me as I kind of suggested that Sherman was the end all and be all of all things. But honestly, if you were part of this and you saw Sherman and saw him just being so cute in the background, you'd feel smitten the same way that I do. Now, to check out what Daniel's doing in the world and to see how his shiny and fun face shows up out there, there's going to be a link in the episode show notes to his Instagram as well as to his TikTok. And I think he's one of those people, you kind of look at him, you see that he didn't give up, you see that he kept going, and now, one broken finger later, he is conquering the known universe. I need to thank Daniel for being on the show and for being so kind and gracious and telling all of his incredible stories. I want to just remind everybody that I am looking for ratings and reviews. So if you can find it in your heart to give me a rating or a little review, I would be ever so grateful. Those ratings and reviews warm the little cockles of my heart and they make me really happy. Very, very happy. So yeah, go ahead and smash those buttons. Give me a rating or a review. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Daniel. I mean, Daniel didn't give up. And I have to say that the kind of work that he's doing, putting himself out there, eating all of this scrumptious food, I mean, it's pretty easy not to give up, frankly, because I love food. And so here I am watching him eat all of these delightful items and just wishing that I could be him in the kind of work that he does, in the joy that he's bringing the world. So yeah, I mean, be like Daniel. Go out there and find a niche that needs someone's voice there. You know, whatever that looks like. You don't have to start your own TikTok or your own Instagram channel or whatever, but find a place where you fit. Find a place where you can create beauty or joy or hilarity or comedy or whatever that looks like. Find your niche and then just start something. Just start something and don't give up, because that's what Daniel did. He refused to back down, even though the struggle was real and, you know, it's exhausting making all this content. He did not give up on himself. And then one magical dog later, one broken finger later, and so very soon, Daniel discovered that the world is in fact his oyster.